I want to thank Misora High School for inviting me. This is the second time that I'm speaking for the dessert reception. And I've been to Dallas quite a few times to speak for it on a number of occasions for different things to the high school girls, and of course for the Abrams and Far North Dallas, and for this special Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur at their new outreach center. And it's a very special city for me, and it's only because this is a special city that I'm here tonight. Unfortunately, I did suffer a loss 2 weeks ago. So I'm not going to tell you about it, but it's a hard one. So I'm in the middle of processing that, and I'm a new person tonight. I haven't yet spoken publicly, so I'll tell you, since I buried my son, my youngest, which was the saddest thing I ever did, but I realized the hardest thing I ever did was raise him. It was a hard job, and it's part of my growth process, and I'm very thankful to be here in Dallas, a city that I care very much about and a high school that I care very much about, for this to be the first time that I'm speaking publicly since his passing. I have to say I do speak all over the country, and I speak in high schools all over the country, although that's not really my group. I love to teach adults. And I'm not sure which, maybe this was the first city that asked me to speak to their high school, and I was very nervous. Speak to high school girls, it's young for me. You know, I didn't feel, even college felt young for me. But now I'm used to it. I do speak in high schools when I travel to speak to adults. They often ask me to speak in high schools also. And I have to say, even on the record, I think this is the nicest one that I've spoken. The girls in Dallas are fabulous. The people in Dallas are fabulous. But the girls are really, really special. And it's only because it's a really special high school and a special community that I'm here tonight. I want to speak to you as my emerging new self and use a different voice than I use in most of the talks that I give. I want to speak specifically from my position. I am a Torah educator and have been, Baruch Hashem, for the last quarter century, but I'm also a Gioret. I'm also a convert. And as I'm aging and becoming more mature in my Judaism, I realize that I'm not a Baal Tshuva. I actually am a convert, and there's a difference. So I want to tell you some of the differences. Right? So I realized that some of the differences are the past and the future. Right? So it's interesting to think about. I did a survey for a few years where I asked people, why do you want your kids to marry Jewish? And I heard many different answers. And you could just think for yourself, why do you want your kids to marry Jewish? And then you'll see where your answer falls in this. So I found that there were three major categories of answers. One was a past-based answer. Right? We have a tradition. We can't break the chain. We have to pass it on. You have to marry Jewish in order to pass that on. Right? One was a very future-based answer. We have a special mission. We have something to accomplish as a people. We can't accomplish that mission without Jewish marriages, so my kids have to marry Jewish. One was a very present-based answer. It's hard to get married. It's hard to manage a marriage, certainly hard across cultures. I want my kids to marry Jewish so that they have a good, strong marriage and a happy world here. So I noticed that in these answers, mostly those who are born observant answered the past-based heritage answer. And mostly, not all, but mostly those who came to observance in the middle of their lives answered from a future-based. And then there's a mix of the middle-based. But certainly people who come to Judaism either as a Baal Tshuva or for sure as a convert are not coming because of the past. Right? So there, I think there probably are Baal Tshuva who come because of the past, but not converts. And I notice there's a very big difference between coming to Judaism because of the mission and coming to Judaism because of the heritage. Heritage can provide truth and an understanding of what's real and true and the essential in the world, and that's certainly something that's attractive to a convert. But really, for me, what was attractive was, first of all, meaning, but really, mission. And as I grow, it's all about the mission, where I can get to, and where, more than where I can get to, where I can bring the world to. Because I am passionate about changing this world. I for sure don't want to leave this world or myself the same as when I entered. I want to change it. And that's our job as Jews, is to transform this world. We actually have a dual mission, transform self and transform world. That is the mission of the Jewish people. And that's what excites me, and that's what I want to be able to accomplish. So when I first converted to Judaism at age 16, I was in high school. I was a sophomore in high school. And then I went to Israel at 16 and a half. I skipped the last 2 years. Don't listen, girls. I got a GED. But I went to college afterwards. But I spent 2 years in seminary in Israel, 17 and 18 years old. And then I served in the army for 2 years. And then I went to college. But what really attracted me was the meaningfulness and then the mission of how I could change the world, what I could make it. And that really comes, so when I first went to Israel, I wanted to be a rabbi, of course, right? What else? I wanted to be as Jewish as I could be, right? Then I found out I'm too religious to be a rabbi. So I figured, okay, I'm going to be this like real big Torah teacher. And then I realized I don't know enough to be a real big Torah teacher. So somebody told me that they specifically told me it takes generations to make real Torah teachers, and I didn't have those generations. And I realized that was true, and then I started to think about, as I aged and matured, what generations I do have. I come from pioneer stock. I'm a 13th generation American. My family came in 1634 from England to this country. So why did they come? They came because they wanted to make a change, to make a difference. And that is the energy of this country. The energy of America is leave the past behind, manifest a new destiny. So that's the energy that I came with into this world, the ability to look at where I lived, look at the environment that I'm in, and make a change. Change myself, change the environment, move forward. That's what I wanted to do. So it's interesting, as I noticed these differences in me and in raising my children and trying to accomplish everything. Sometimes I have these little moments that like shines a spotlight on the difference between Baal Tshuva and convert, because I really did put myself in the Baal Tshuva camp for a long time since I became religious so young. My Hebrew is fluent. You know, I can say chetz no problem. And and I know how to do a six-braid challah, even in my sleep. So I really thought of myself as a Baal Tshuva and not as a convert, but here was one of my instances. So I was speaking in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm just trying to think. It was Charleston, South Carolina, whatever, one of those Carolinas. And I'm walking along with a woman who has a PhD. She's in her 40s and a PhD in biology. And we're just talking about different things, and she says she has this PhD in biology. And I said, oh, my son's also studying biology, and he wants to get a PhD in biology, and he wants to study genetics. She said, oh, I'm also doing that, blah, 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 blah. I said, either he wants to do that or raise goats in the Golan. So she said, I also wanted to raise goats in the Golan. But my father said to me, I didn't survive hungry for you to raise goats in the Golan. And I was thinking, never, ever in my family would there ever be such a line as, I didn't pioneer out to Michigan so you could... What? What? That's not an American sentence. You know, it's like has no place in Protestant history at all. There's no, I didn't do something so that you could do something. It doesn't exist. It's very Jewish. I did learn from that as a mother of teenagers, which now they're past teenage. But as a mother of teenagers, there's this whole tool of parenting that I totally wasn't using. Guilt. You know, I had to complete my acculturation and learn how to actually wield that tool as a parent. Like, how do you use that well in a family? Anyway, I worked on it because being that pioneer and knowing that I could leave my past behind and manifest a new destiny, I anchored in strongly to our first mitzvah as the Jewish people, which is Hitchadshut. Right, the first mitzvah that we got as a people when we came out of Mitzrayim was look up in the sky and see that new moon. That's brand new. And that newness should be to you the first of all newnesses. That's the way Rav Hirsch translates that sentence in the Torah. That moon should be to you the first of the months, but really Rav Hirsch says that newness, a chodesh hazeh, chadesh hazeh, yeh lechem l'rosh chadashim, that newness should be the first of newnesses. You are a people that constantly makes yourself new. Don't get stuck in the past. You're not who you were born. You are who you choose. It's a very important concept for us. We talk about nature and we talk about nurture and what feeds into us more. And both nature and nurture influence us, but who we are is who we choose to be. So I'll tell you, I saw, unfortunately, we had a lot of sadness in our lives this year. It was interesting to see my son-in-law, who is a quadriplegic, and my daughter, who is Baruch Hashem healthy, have a beautiful marriage and waited 4.5 years for children. They finally conceived twins, and unfortunately, one died 2 weeks after birth. So, but while she was in the NICU, while they're both in the NICU, another baby in the NICU died. So I didn't know that until I came to the NICU that day and I saw a police presence. I said, what's going on? And so the nurses said, well, one of the babies died today and their father, the father went nuts. And we had to call security to restrain him. Now, of course, nobody blamed the father for going nuts in his grief losing his baby, but it was just a scene that I noticed, okay? So the security had to come in and calm him down and take him away, and he threw things and broke things, and okay. Then, unfortunately, about a week later, my granddaughter passed away, but my son-in-law, the father in that case, a real Ben Torah, sat with her the entire time as her life ebbed away and wanted to hold her. And he, it was a whole beautiful story, but the way that he held her and was with her, and I just thought about the difference in the choices of these two men. Now you might say, in the moment of tremendous grief, is there choice? There's not in that moment. In the moment of pain, you are who you are. You can't make a choice then, but you are who you already chose to be. Right? So if you chose to be somebody who yells and throws things when you're angry, that's what's going to happen when you're upset. Right? If you chose to be somebody who really receives the way Hashem runs the world and totally understands that it is for the good, and that even though you're in a moment of ultimate pain, this must be because Hashem arranged the world for the good, and I could step up to the plate and receive this and hold this and do this, it's only because you've chosen that again and again and again that you could do it in that moment. So we are who we choose to be. And we need to know that we can all make choices to become who we want to become. Of course, I didn't go to a Jewish high school. I wasn't privileged. But I did get to go to seminary afterwards. But I'll tell you a story from my high school. I went to a performing arts high school in Portland, Oregon. I took ballet every day. And I had a ballet mistress. It was a very serious high school in terms of ballet and performing arts. So we had a very serious French ballet teacher who walked around with a stick, and she used her stick on us. And she would whap us, right? So she would hit us, if we were standing the wrong way, you're supposed to have your arm out like this, but if your elbow sagged, she'd whap your elbow. If your wrist sagged, she'd whap your wrist. If your shoulders are up, she'd whap your shoulders. Whatever, she would walk around with her stick and give you a little tap. Sometimes a tap and sometimes a whap, right? So one day, we had a relatively new student, and she was all over the student. Whap on the tush, and whap on the shoulders, and whap in the belly, and whap on the wrist, and she started to cry. And she said, it's not fair. You're always hitting me. I can't stand it. And the teacher was very dramatic. She stopped the music. We had loud music back then, live music back then. She stopped the pianist, and she came over to her, and she said, don't you cry when I correct you. I only correct you because I see potential. You cry the day I stop. And she started the music again. Now, I filed that story away, and when I learned the 23rd Psalm, Shiftecha u'mishantecha heme yenachamuni, thy rod and thy staff both comfort me. So I learned what that means. The shepherd has a staff. The shepherd has a stick that he uses. And the stick that he uses can either be a staff that he leans upon as he's going up the hill, or a whapping stick to get the sheep back into the fold, right? But he only hits the sheep really to protect them, to keep them in the group. So Hashem gives us sometimes support with a stick and sometimes a patch with a stick, but it's all both out of love. It's only corrections because he sees potential. And that's what a test is about. I had a child, my first son was all over the place. Very ADD, I didn't know what ADD was at the time. He's 26 today. Today it's fabulous. Everything that was really hard about raising him is perfect in his role in a jewelry store that he runs because he's everywhere all the time. And he totally knows how to run that store and see every client and understand every client, and he's with them, and he's just a ball of energy, and it's fabulous there. It was really hard on his RVM, you know, educating him, but he's terrific today. But when he was little, when I had a four-year-old, him, who was three, and newborn twins, right? So when we would divide up the work, husband and wife, who would take who shopping and who would babysit? It was either Avi or Elisheva and the twins. It was equal work, right? A four-year-old and newborn twins or him. It was absolutely equal division of the labor. So my father, who did not visit often, came one time and he saw my son everywhere. And he said, "What is going on with this child?" Which is a question that I wondered myself. So I had spoken to my Rebbetzin about it. She told me it's a test. So I said to my father, "It's a test." He said, "What do you get if you pass the test?" I said, "I don't know." So I went back to Tehillah Yeager. I said, "What do I get if I pass the test?" So I had to learn more about tests and what they are. Tests are not about passing. Tests are about reaching inside and pulling out latent potential and making you into something bigger than you once were. Right? So there's no such thing as passing the test. The test, you could see it, or I see it anyway, is sort of like a chasm in between you and a bigger you. And sometimes Hashem says, "Vavakasha, I invite you to grow." And you sometimes say, "You know what? No thanks." And then Hashem says, "You know what? Yes." He gives you a push right into the chasm. Then it's up to you. It's not that you either get to the other side or you don't. However you get there, that's your prize, is you. Bigger and stronger, to the extent that you accomplish that, whatever that is. But it's about constantly renewing yourself, becoming somebody new, becoming stronger, bigger, more capacious, more loving, more able, whatever it is. But it's about bringing the latent potential out and becoming more than you have been. It's interesting, we're close enough to Shavuos. Last time I spoke was Sfiras Omer. And I had an Omer thought. I'll give you a little Shavuos thought, but it's not really. But just to hang on that. So on Shavuos, when we're given the Torah, we're actually all asked to become an Aron Kodesh. Because really, we are asked to hold the Torah and carry the Torah with us wherever we go. So if we're supposed to become an Aron Kodesh, we could learn something from the Aron Kodesh. So let's look at the Holy Ark. What does it look like? We know that it had gold on the outside and gold on the inside, but in the middle it was wood. Why was there wood on the inside? Why not just gold through and through? The menorah is gold through and through. What's up with the wood in the middle? So our sages say there's wood in the middle because it would be too heavy to carry if it was solid gold. Okay, that's an answer, except for it's not, because nobody carried the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh carried the people who carried it, right? So how could it be too heavy to carry? So we learn from the Aron Kodesh that we're supposed to be the same on the outside as the inside. We should be gold on the outside and gold on the inside. But it might be too heavy for us emotionally to carry that we have to be perfect through and through. Maybe there should be wood in the middle, wood grows, to say, you know what, there's still space for growth. Yes, you should be gold on the outside and gold on the inside, but in the middle there's room for growth. And if it was solid gold, and we were all supposed to be solid gold, without that room for growth, and if we were asked to be perfect through and through, that would be too heavy to carry. It would be too much for us. But if we know that we have the opportunity to grow into becoming the same on the outside as the inside, that there's wood in the middle that could still grow, then it's an opportunity. So the question is, grow towards what? What are we supposed to become? I was very happy to hear Miriam say that all in a day's work, we're here to bring Mashiach, right? So I think, and this is one of my voices as a Giorit, looking towards the future that I want to bring, I think it's very important for us to look towards our mission. I work with Kiruv organizations all across the country, and I've been in Kiruv for, well, since I started breathing, really, Jewishly, so for 32 and a half years. And there's all kinds of questions. Recently, a whole magazine was written about how do we measure success? You know, do we measure success when somebody becomes Shomer Shabbos? Do we measure success with increased Jewish engagement? Do we measure success with decreased anger towards things? Like, when do we measure success? What's successful engagement? Even those who would say Shmirat Shabbat, Sabbath observance or full mitzvah keeping is success, I would beg to differ. First of all, I do think every step is success. But second of all, I think that's certainly not the end. Anybody who thinks keeping Shabbos and Kashrus and all the other mitzvahs, all 613, is the end goal is sorely mistaken. That is a prerequisite to accomplishing our goal, which is transform self, transform world. That's our job. The mitzvot are the tools to accomplish that. If we don't hone those tools, we can't really accomplish it. But the tools are just the prerequisite. We have to get into the tools so that we can accomplish the goal. But the goal is transformation. So, let's see. That being said, I would say that as a Jewish community, we have matured incredibly over the last 2,000 years. And we're at a place of transition. Everybody knows Mashiach is around the corner. But we're not quite sure how far that corner is, but we're all in agreement. We're not living in an age today where one person has their suitcase under the bed ready to go. First of all, we all have credit cards. We know they sell clothes in Israel. We don't need a suitcase. But but second of all, everybody's in agreement that Mashiach is close. It's not just the individual super pious who are waiting with bated breath. We're all like pretty excited about it. We could feel the crackling in the air. It's definitely coming. So what does that mean? It means that we're shifting in Jewish history. It means that what we've been doing until now has to change. So I would say what we've been doing until now, strongly, I'd say till probably about 30 years ago, is hang on by our fingernails. Right? Since the destruction of the Second Temple till about 30 years ago, really our job was just make sure we still exist. Stay alive, marry Jewish, have Jewish kids, keep them alive, to marry Jewish, to have Jewish kids, until we could get to today. Right? And yes, we've accomplished a lot along the way, but now it's our time to flower. Now we are compared to the Shkedia Paracha, to the blossoming almond tree. What is the blossoming almond tree? Why is that our tree that we're identified with? Rav Hirsch says, all the fruit trees in the orchard will blossom. All of them, all the nations will bear fruit. But the almond tree blossoms first. We blossom first and we show the way, how to create a connection with the divine. That's our job, is to blossom and show the way, which means that we have to not just be, in the words of Ilan Feldman, an observant community, but rather a model community. We have to behave in a way that everybody looks at us and says, wow, what makes you like that? How do you shine so brightly? Where does your source of light come from? How are you that way? How is your marriage that way? How are your families that way? How are your schools that way? How are your communities that way? Eventually, we should be zeicha. We should merit that everybody should say, how is your state that way? How is your government like that? It's amazing, right? That's what people are supposed to look at us and say, wow, how is it like that? Rav Hirsch explains and then translated, oh, I just wanted to show you this master plan by Aryeh Carmel, which is really Sefer Chorev in easy to read English. If anybody ever wants to read the Reader's Digest version of Rav Hirsch's version of the master plan of Judaism, what we're all about, that's this book. But he says, why is the state of Israel, why is the land of Israel in that spot? At the convergence of three continents with an ocean on the side. It's because it is the center of the world. And everybody has to pass through Israel and thereby pick up ideas and spread them throughout the world in order to accomplish anything. And you can even see today that all the computer technology is centered there. Much of, not all of, but much of the computer technology is centered there. So people are still passing through Israel for communication. We just have to get on board and become the model citizens of the world that everybody will start looking at us and say, wow, how could I be like you? Okay, so I just want to leave you with one thought. It's late. We've had a lot of great speakers. It's interesting to think about Shammai and Hillel. We know that Hillel was the softy, Shammai was the toughy when it comes to the way, their perspective on things. And yet it's Shammai in Pirkei Avos that says we should receive everyone with a pleasant countenance. We should smile at everybody, right? So what does that mean? Receive everybody with a pleasant countenance. Smile at everybody. And why did Shammai say it? Because you'd think it should be in the softer, create a lovely environment. We've all heard about this mitzvah before, that our face actually doesn't belong to us. We don't actually ever see our face unless we look in a mirror. Really, our face belongs to everybody else, and we have a responsibility to wear a beautiful face so that everybody else will feel comfortable in the environment in which we shine our face. But I heard such a nice thought from Rabbi Feldheim a couple of weeks ago that I want to share. So it says, "Hevi mekabelet kol hadam b'sever panim yefot." So we translate Sever panim yefot as a pleasant countenance. But he said, really, sever comes from the word svara, to think about something,
or to think into something. And panim is the same word as pnim, innerness. That if you think about the person that you're looking at, you will be able to see their inner goodness. You should receive everyone with the intellectual peering into their innerness, that you could see deep into their inner goodness. That we should receive everyone with seeing into their goodness. So that there's both the physical action of smiling at them, and then the intellectual action of looking deep into a person, whether they're good or bad, or however we perceive them, but that everybody has something good deep inside that we could find. Some people have it on the surface, easy to see, but everybody has something in there. For that, you can look more into Tomer Devorah if you want to find some of the Midos of Hashem where he looks into the goodness of each person. But that we all have the capacity to look deep inside and find what's good in a person. When we do that, we actually are receiving them, and we can receive their goodness too. Have a mikabel et kol ha'adam, that we should receive with our intellect some of the inner goodness of each person. We could create a synergy in the world where we're smiling out and we're looking in, but when we look in and see the goodness, we create a pathway where the goodness can be shared. And that's part of how we can start shining the light, shining our light into the world, when we unleash some of that light. See more of the goodness, feel more of the goodness, smile more of the goodness one to another, and really create a world in which people look at us and say, wow, how could I be like you? How could we transform the world to become more empowered, more synergistic, more educated in the knowledge of Hashem, that we could all shine together? So that's what I would like to share with you tonight, that we should... I didn't tell you why Shammai said that, but I'll leave that for another time. It's an interesting thing, actually. It's related to Birkas Yaakov, in case anybody wants to look that up. Anyway, I want to leave you with a thought that we should all spend our energy growing towards the goal of transforming the whole world. It's in our capacity. For sure it's there. Hashem's in charge of when Mashiach comes. But it's up to us to become the model citizens that will be the cadre that works with Mashiach to transform all of humanity and make this place the place that Hashem wants it to be. So with that, I would say, let's leave our past behind and manifest a new destiny. Let's become Jewish pioneers and really create a new self, become the product of our choices, and shine, shine, shine.